ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, golazo, golazo.
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for February 7th, 2020. It's a new day, it's a new era, it's a new CBA this Friday. And to break down the agreement between Major League Soccer and the Major League Soccer Players Association, joining us now on the line, Mickey Turner from Soccer Esquire, writes a lot, multiple different places also. Mickey, thanks for joining us this morning.
Dwayne, Kevin, thanks for having me on. It was a pretty eventful day yesterday in the world of Euro soccer.
Indeed it was. We had to pivot 10 minutes into the show, Mickey, but that's fine. That's why we have a live show. We live in a society that likes winners and losers, and we like things in black and white, which is unfortunate in many ways, and nuance is dead. But that said, was there a winner and a loser, other than the fans and stuff like that yesterday? Was there a winner or a loser in the CBA, or really is it something that's a little more nuanced and down the middle?
Yeah, I think it's fair to call it down the middle. I think it's fair also to say that the players got a lot of what they wanted, and this is a vast improvement over the CBA in 2015, as they hitched their wagon to free agency in the 2015 negotiations, almost to the exclusion of everything else. And when they came out of that deal, yeah, they had some form of free agency, but almost immediately after that, MLS, the league, instituted the TAM protocol, which added a bunch of money to investment, which made it pretty clear that the players had left a lot of money on the. So this time around, they've made some fairly substantial gains in a number of areas. Not so much in the salary budget. That still is going up, relatively slow. But they got some massive increases in charter flights. I think one of the free agency, that is dramatically improved for the players from last time around. I was actually probably a little surprised that they got as much as they did. Age and years of service down to 24 and 5. That is going to increase the number of players who can participate in free agency in their prime years, which I think is a key point. These players will be in their prime when they're starting to get free agency service. And so that is a massive win for the players and definitely something that they were shooting for. They've definitely cracked open the free agency door at this point.
Yeah, certainly. It's like almost close to what hockey's numbers are in terms of the age and that. So that's a big victory for them there. Mickey, you're in a large market. Follow the Sounders pretty closely. I'm in a large market. Follow TFC pretty closely. Kevin's in a market somewhere in the middle. When you're looking at some of the big spending initiatives here, particularly what relates to the DP, do you think this is something that is reining back the bigger markets, or do you feel that clubs like Seattle and Toronto can still flex their muscle a little bit with the CBA?
Yeah, so that was probably that's the one thing that the owners got for sure was a bit of a potential restriction on the spend of designated players. I think we all remember that report out of The Athletic maybe about a month ago, which said that the third DP slot would now be limited to about $1.5 million in maximum spend unless the player is under 23 years of age, in which case there is no spend. And one of the justifications for that back then in that reporting was that when I said rein in DP spending a little bit. And so that's been done with the provision you kind of referenced. Although it should be pointed out, and I asked you directly about this on the conference call he had yesterday, that initiative is not starting this year, and it may not start next year. It is totally at the discretion of MLS. But for 2020, you can have three high-priced DPs if you like. The Sounders, for one, have three DPs over that $1.5 million. They are potentially at risk in 2021 of having to do some maneuvering to get in compliance with that if MLS decides to initiate that protocol. But as of yet, it's not initiated, so teams can still have three DPs of any number they want. And it should also be pointed out that most teams did not have over that $1.5 million in TAM. Toronto had that. Dwayne, you can correct me if I'm wrong. You currently do not have that because Bradley is a TAMable player. I think the only team that has that right now, aside from the Sounders, is the Galaxy. So it's not like teams were rushing out to spend $7 million on three respective DPs.
Yeah, before Kevin jumps in, just to confirm that, Bradley was converted to a TAM player, so Toronto currently only has two DP players on the roster, but of course this is Toronto. They're negotiating to bring another one in, so we'll see what this means.
One aspect of this agreement that is interesting to me, amongst others also, Mickey, is, I guess, a new term that is now coined, unrestricted money, from 53% of unrestricted money now. So we're just talking about the regular salary cap and your regular under TAM, under DP contracts with no money mechanism associated with. So 52% of the salary cap now is unrestricted money, and all the way to 82% in 2024. When we're seeing the increase in spending, $1.9 billion throughout this new agreement will be spent on salary cap, and most of it will be through 2024 in unrestricted money. How do you think this would help teams build themselves and maybe build themselves with accountability, where you'll need to scout a bit more to make sure that you can make sure you good use of that 82% of unrestricted money?
Yeah, that's a big one. General allocation money is still going to be a thing, and in fact is going to increase, but discretionary TAM is going to start to decrease, and probably by when we get to 2024, TAM potentially could go away. And so with that free money, teams are going to have more of a free hand in how they develop their rosters. And as you said, there's going to be some accountability for those teams and how they spend that money. They, you know, the training wheels, so to speak, are starting to come off. And so you're going to have to, improve your scouting networks. You're going to have to improve your front offices, and you're just going to kind of have to do all the things that sports teams do to try to compete in this league. Even with the somewhat restrictive DP protocol that could come into play, you've still got a lot of money that you can spend outside of the salary budget. And so the Players Association was really angling for an increase in freedom of how teams construct their rosters. Not everyone has to do it the same way. Not everyone has means to do it the same way. Even though we're talking about 100 millionaires and billionaires, there still is a scale on which various owners are willing to invest in MLS. We've all seen that, obviously, over the years. And so, yeah, it's going to be great to see allow teams to kind of do their own in constructing a roster and not be so cookie cutter, and more importantly, probably for the Players Association, not to have MLS essentially micromanaging every transaction that comes down the pipe.
One of the big, I would say, success for the players in this negotiation process and this new CBA is the compensation aspect, especially when it comes to reserve minimum salary for senior minimum players of the first team. It was around 56, 58 recently. It's going to go up, and it's going to go all the way to maybe $109,000 in 2024, where we're looking at finally base salaries that are not close to what the other major league sports franchises and sports in North America are, but we're getting there. When we're looking at NHL, another like $300,000, $400,000 is usually the bottom salary. At least it's in the six figures. It's in the right direction. We're seeing also an increase in what they called competition through performances with bonus, and you had an answer yesterday too that in these CBA, if you win the CONCACAF Champions League, there's an extra bonus there. So bonus through performances to help have a better salary. So this is a good aspect of this new CBA for the players to be able to, first of all, have a better base salary and also some bonuses.
Yeah, we can absolutely remember back in 2008 and before era where maybe even go back to 2010 when the when kind of the first modern CBA was negotiated, some of those minimum salary contracts were just shocking. You were looking at like $12,000 to $15,000 for reserve players, meaning that they were obviously having to go out and find other jobs to make ends meet. And now you're going up from 56,000 in 2019 for a reserve minimum salary to 63 this year, and then up to 85 in 2024, which is certainly a salary that most players can live on, and even, you know, the most metropolitan of cities. Yeah, you're not maybe getting a condo downtown and in Manhattan, but you can still get something in one of the other boroughs, possibly, and pretty much in any other city. $85,000 is going to get you something decent to live on. And then for obviously senior players, getting up to $109,000, that is a solid living that you can make, even if you're not a top player in MLS. You're right, it's not anywhere near what other major sports are paying on minimum salaries, but it's a substantial increase, and you've got to think the players are extremely happy about that, especially the younger players who maybe don't have to room with people as they start off on their MLS careers. And then, as far as the salary bonuses are concerned, yeah, definite increases, although, you know, the CONCACAF Champions League, the winning for that is around $380,000, I think Fuse reported. That's a team-wide bonus, so it's not per player, obviously. That would be a hell of a boost. But, yeah, still, again, these are things that are going to contribute to the quality of life of the players in the league, and especially with the bonus structure in place for games played, win bonuses and things like that, even minimum salary players can start approaching six figures if they outperform their deals and get significant playing time.
Hey, I can tell you that we're not quite at the point where someone making around that money for the young players might still have to room in this city that I'm in.
Yeah.
But that's an issue with rents, not an issue with their other things. There is a provision for the media rights for there to be some cooperation, some partnerships between the players and the owners. If they get a big deal there, they're going to share that. How important was having that level of cooperation added to this deal in your mind?
Yeah, I did an interview with Fuse back in September, and media rights was definitely one of the things that the Players Association was angling for. He acknowledged and conceded that it is difficult to kind of plan for that because they have no idea what the media deal is going to look like in 2023. Which is why any revenue sharing was put off until then. We all know about the struggles MLS has had with television ratings and relevance, so we don't know what kind of deal they're going to be looking at, and to say nothing of the changing landscape of broadcast, terrestrial television, and then obviously streaming. So currently MLS gets about $90 million per year from the TV deal. That's split with U.S. Soccer, so it's probably more $70 million that MLS gets, and so that doesn't go very far for what is going to be approaching 30 teams. So they're going to be hoping to probably triple or quadruple that TV deal to kind of make up for what the additional teams that are in place, and that's kind of where it comes into play. The players will get 25% of any increase after the owners are kind of made whole for their dilution number of teams. As a starting point, they already get some money, or at least it's incorporated in some fashion into the CBA. But again, the current television money is so nominal relative to other leagues that it's not much money. So they're certainly all going to be rowing in the same direction to try to grow those rights, because that's obviously a win-win if they can get a commensurate TV deal.
There was a lot of news in MLS yesterday, from Nacho Piatti to the CBA, and then, of course, the lawsuit, not necessarily MLS, the Pro-Rel lawsuit was announced. It apparently had been decided last week. We talked to you about that in the past. I'm just wondering really quickly, I'm going to joke here for a second, does this mean that we're done debating about Pro-Rel in North American soccer?
Yes, I saw that from you on Twitter, I think. Obviously, the short answer is no, but more seriously, that decision, I mean, it was unlikely that the Court of Arbitration for Sport, which is where the Miami FC and the Kingston Stockade petitioned to basically force FIFA to enforce Article 9 of its mandate to institute Pro-Rel here. That was always unlikely to happen, and the reasoning handed down by Kraft. We haven't seen the full ruling, so I don't want to get too far out in front of analyzing it. But essentially, they said that that was basically for confederations and associations that had already imposed a pyramid structure, and the USA has obviously never done that, and so they basically felt that it was kind of outside of the scope of what they're allowed to do. So it's going to be up to those who want pro rel to either exercise some muscle in the form of boycotts and pressure, political pressure, things like that, to try to get that installed, because MLS is a closed league, and it's unlikely that they are going to impose pro rel unless they think it would help with their bottom line, such with maybe a massive TV deal or something like that. But for now, the legal argument for pro rel is basically settled.
You can't close an open pyramid is basically what they sort out, and they can't close an open period. Is that kind of the ruling from what you understand?
Yeah, exactly. And you can't force someone who doesn't have that pyramid to open it up. So that's kind of where we are.
All right. So sorry to everyone out there who was hoping that Pro Rel would fix every single issue with North American soccer by this year. That's not going to happen. But speaking of one thing that's going to happen, Mickey, is a 401k contribution benefit extension for veteran players, increased moving stipends and benefits, and increased travel per diem, and of course, famously, charters. Now, it's not that you have four, you need to use eight in 2020 to all the way to 16 in 2024. I know a few owners that are not happy about this, for sure, looking at you, Robert Kraft. But looking at the gains here, when we're looking at labor relationships across different work areas, domains, or fields in regular life, those are what you fight for. Increased travel per diem. If you're looking at young players traveling, that you have to travel cross country, yes, your hotel might be paid for. You got to eat. You got your free time. 401k contribution for players, so they have something to turn around after the retirement and not have to work, which is fine working, but not have to necessarily get something that they do not want to do. So these are labor gains that I would consider relatable for everyone out there listening to this show. How important are these gains, in your opinion, Mickey?
Yeah, these are the benefits of working, and everyone likes to have those kind of things. You talk about health insurance, contributions to retirement, per diems, as you mentioned. Focusing on charter flights for a moment, that was a big one. The Players Association had long complained about kind of just the basics of getting to and from games, flight cancellations, flying in middle seats for long flights, cross-country flights, the restrictions that were in place. And so by 2024, you've got 16 legs that you'll be able to charter, starting with eight this year, which basically covers all of the cross-country away trips that a team would have. It's not like teams are going to be chartering from Seattle to Vancouver necessarily, or certainly either. But getting those long cross-country flights in charters is going to make a massive difference in quality of play, recovery time, and just all of the things that will improve the quality of the product on the field. So, even though I think the players would have potentially foregone that for gains elsewhere, they realized that that was an important thing for their members. Start to improve the background things that aren't necessarily out in front when you're watching or covering soccer. So a massive gain there. And then obviously the 401k contributions, I think it was about 3.5 or 3.25 last time. So they got a modest increase there. And then per diems, everyone likes to have a nice meal out when you're out on the road. So definitely a bunch of stuff that the players can be happy about, and that, the owners still got, they're not massive gains. The owners continue their incremental progress and keeping things at least not on a straight lineup, but on a steady slope.
Oh, one thing I want to ask you before we say goodbye for today, Mickey. MLS is 25 years old and it's the 25th season this year. It's not the first CBA. Is it the CBA of maturity for this league? Are we at a point, like you mentioned earlier, where you can take the training wheels off a little bit, give a bit of trust, get a bit more responsibilities to the club and to the players, and a bit more respect? Is it maturity? Is it the CBA of your mid-20s when adult life becomes reality?
I think that's a good way to put it. Maybe if it's not that, then it's definitely the first job out of college. So you're right in that kind of, you know, kind of developmental stage where you're kind of now out on your own. I think we can all guess that the 2024 CBA negotiations are really going to be something, because that's going to be leading right into the 2026 World Cup. So that's the one where you are definitely moving from your first job to negotiating that big opportunity that you may have in front of you. So this one, yeah, this seems like a bridge to that 2026, I think is the fair way to put it, because, again, the players got a lot of stuff, necessarily get everything they wanted, especially probably in the area of compensation, and while the owners are investing more, but that didn't necessarily have to break the bank. And so we've got the two things to look forward to. We've got the 2023 television deal, and then you've got the 2026 World Cup. And so you combine those two things in that 2024 negotiation, that's probably where the fireworks are really going to be.
Mickey Turner, thank you very much for your time today. You can follow Mickey's work by following him on Twitter at TurnerESQ. Mickey, we wish you a great day, and hopefully it's a bit more quiet on your side today than yesterday.
Yeah, that was a bit much. So, but it was fun to cover. And thanks you guys for having me. And anytime you need me, I'm happy to come on.
And we'll be right back after this short break.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at Soccer Today SPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back on Soccer Today. I'm Kevin Larmé with Dwayne Rollins. As always, you like what Dwayne and I do on a regular basis, make sure you go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork. This week already, breaking news audio for Piatti recorded with Tristan Amour earlier this week. Breaking news audio concerning the Canadian women's national team and Christine St. Clair last weekend. We have the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast, and later today, the return of Five Rings Extra, where Dwayne and I will talk about the 1976 Montreal Olympic Boxing Tournament, the sweet science of boxing with Sugar Ray Leonard. That's going to be awesome later today on our Patreon feed. Of course, premium podcast available at patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. We had a chance to look at the CBA, you and I, Dwayne, and more in details and more, and looking at the gains on each side, looking at the amount of money increased in investment by the owners. And it does put things into perspective. With hindsight, we can look back at the comments of Arthur Blank earlier this week, at Don Garber's comments last November, and put things in a scale, weighed them out, and see who was right. I think Arthur Blank's a bit more closer to the truth, probably. But it is a fascinating bridge CBA to 2024. A lot of gains, a lot of openness by the owners, I would say, to go to places that they were refrained to do so before by the majority of other owners.
Yeah, I think there's a few reasons for that. I think that a lot of the newer owners that have come in are much more inclined to view the sport as part of a global marketplace and understand that the sport has to reflect the realities of that global marketplace. They have to be a little more in line with movement and with compensation, although that is moving slower than they'd like. Than they have been in the past, where I believe most of the owners viewed the league much, very much in a North American sports league context, right? So we're kind of finding that middle ground. I don't think it's ever going to go all the way. It is a North American sports league. That's why, you know, I will defend other aspects of it where I think that they work in this part of the world. But nonetheless, when it comes to the global marketplace, there were some issues there. And look, MLS is still always going to MLS a little bit. They're still going to have pockets of money and ways that they try and, you know, rein in spending in certain areas. And And, you know, if you're a TFC fan that really only cares about TFC, you might be a little bit upset, for instance, today that there might be a restriction coming down the line that prevents them from flexing MLSE's muscle in the past. Same with Atlanta, same with other teams. Although I would suggest that this league has shown a history of being flexible with its rules when there's an opportunity in front of them. Yeah. The Galaxy rule, we'll call that.
We'll call it the okay, sure. Okay, this set of rules applies for you, and then there's the rest of you.
Yeah, so there's that. But, you know, there is some labor peace, and it's an indication that the players want to work together to help build the sport in the league even further in this part of the world. And that's an important consideration in this, that 20% is not much. 20% of a couple million bucks is, you know, well, I mean, I take it, but when you spread it over a whole bunch of people, it's not a lot.
But if you go to what it could be, that's where it becomes interesting. And also, when you look at the media rights across Major League Soccer, the national rights are up in 2022, after the 2022 season. So that's only two more seasons, I believe. And there's going to be an increase because there's one thing we know, and if you look at different sports entities on television, regular television, or streaming services, over the last few years, there is what I call a race to arm. It's like the race to the moon. It's a similar type of race where not everyone's aware of everyone's doing, and some entities, like the DAZNs of this world with the Premier League and Champions League example in Canada, are willing to push the bid a bit further. And then it's the questioning of regular mainstream television channels like TSN and Sportsnet had last year, or the last 2 years, looking at their spending, and is it worth it for us to spend on the soccer? I guess not. So that will come into play. And how big is TSN Sportsnet in Canada, or Fox, ESPN, ESPN Plus? Let's not forget, Dwayne, the big thing that's fascinating right now in the States is, since Disney Plus has existed, ESPN Plus has close to double their membership. There's over 7.8 million of members right now of ESPN Plus as of yesterday. Yes, it does help because there's a package where you can have Disney Plus, you, Hulu, and ESPN Plus. But MLS Live, remember MLS Live? Well, it's ESPN Plus in the States. So there's a lot of things that are going to become part of this equation of that 20% of the media rights you're talking about that could be a lot more down the road than what it is right now. We're looking at just a few years away.
Yeah, look, I'm going to use a sales analogy, a business sales analogy. Anyone out there that has worked sales or sales adjacent will understand that there's a couple different strategies when you want to get your overall numbers up, your commission a little higher, and it's kind of what we're talking about here, right? A commission that the players are looking for, part of this deal. You can go after enterprise. Enterprise are your big companies, your blue chips, and they pay a lot of money for whatever you're selling. I'm talking about B2B sales here. Or you can go after what they call the SMB market, which is small, medium business, in a sports context, and get a whole bunch of those, right? Adds up to the same thing in the end. I think MLS is more going after the SMB contracts in the future. Yeah. They're not probably going to get $100 million from one company, but what they might be able to do is go to several countries and sell their rights at a little bit, particularly in Latin America, where they have a lot of players now. Yeah. And they might be able to sell a little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit here, a little bit there. And in whole, just like a salesperson that sells a lot of SMB, but no enterprise, even though they don't have that blue chip name under their belt, they're still taking home the same commission as this guy that goes out and sells one big contract to Bell. And that's just, I think, kind of what you'll see in their TV rights, that we might not be excited by the American or the Canadian number, but we might be
internationally, you're right,
pleasantly surprised by how many other rights deals that they negotiate together.
And just look at how it has happened, the same thing across the world in other sports entities over the last few years. And it's about, where can you continue to grow? And if you look at media entities in the world, there's saturated markets out there. It's hard to start something new in the States, in Canada, in Europe, and especially in Britain. Like, if you start a soccer show in the UK, guess what? It's going to be hard to get some traction. The market is saturated. People are fighting for your attention. Same in the world of podcasts, I would say. But if you look at the same thing, if you go to another market that might not be saturated, that might be untapped, there's a growth potential there. And that's how companies look at it. And you're right. This might be how some looks at it. And Soccer United Marketing, which is the business aspect of Major League Soccer, we talk about this often. This might be how some looks at it. And that might be what MLSPA be like, you know what? There might be something there. If we just get a piece of the digital rights, which includes a lot of potential revenue streams, we can make up a difference there that we didn't have before and slowly edge to a partnership that's similar than the other leagues, I would say. So MLS, so Major League Baseball, NBA, NFL, and NHL, which are all different in how their work and their CBA and their relationship between players and between also owners, it's very different. Like, there's the NFL, which is like one spectrum. We talked about this last week. And there's the NBA and the other. This is a CBA that's on the way closer to the NBA, I believe. And the digital rights is one of the things that could get a lot of attention. Because, Dwayne, if Major League Soccer continues to grow and becomes what it wants to be in 2 years, you know, we're almost there. 2022 is close. So you never know what the digital rights could be coming. Like, you can have millions and millions and millions of dollars coming from markets that you do not expect. If soccer, if MLS strikes the attention of Australia, or of, you never know, there's untapped potential, untapped money there. And you're right, I think the digital rights is the way to get there.
Yeah, look, MLB's done a great job in that, by the way. If you really want to look at a league that's on top of the digital rights thing, I think that's why Major League Baseball, even though the overall popularity of the sport is dipping,
they're making money.
Their revenues continue to grow.
Because Major League Baseball produces like NHL Network and others. Like, it's that simple, where they were so good digitally that they actually got rights of other things and produces way more thing than we anticipate. Just like other big media companies like Media Pro, which produced the Super Bowl for a few platforms last weekend. So there's a lot of things that we're not aware of, at least that you have to dig deep to get, and you're absolutely right there. MLB is on top of its game digitally.
Yeah, and the other point I was going to make is that if you look back at the history of SUM some and Major League Soccer, they've always been very good at finding creative revenue streams. This is an organization, a structure that came out of the fact that someone noticed that no one was bidding for the 2002 World Cup rights. Going back a long time now, it makes me feel old to say that's a long time ago, but it is. No one was. There was no American rights. That's where some came from, if you don't know the history behind it. That they basically, Don Garber in particular, said, look, we need to figure out ways to find revenue in different places. And they have been very good at that, beginning with that insightful thought. And now you look at that aspect of things, and it's not even a question anymore. They've grown it there. So there's no reason to think they can't continue to grow the concept of a club game. And you don't think for a half second the reason that they are having League MX play the All-Star game this year, and they have the Champions Cup, and they have all of these sort of rumors about more integration within the Mexican League and the American League, that is totally about creating revenues and creating opportunities to sell things.
And the first,
the Mexican teams, yeah.
And the first thing we'll learn is, well, some got the rights for Liga MX, and then they're going to sell it to the best bidder in the U.S. and make a buck off of it. I wouldn't be surprised at all. But that's how it works. And we're seeing, and let's not forget, this all goes like, soccer in North America is complicated because a lot of charlatans, if you understand what I mean, were there in the past, like Traffic, like that company and others. So there's a lot of people that are, at least that were burned, that were not willing to invest in soccer in North America. We're moving away from that. It's like a new golden era. I think it's what we call the silver age. We had the golden age of soccer in North America in the 80s and the late 70s with the NASL. I think there was a silver age maybe with the beginning of MLS and early 2000 with the first big expansion of Major League Soccer. I think now it's a platinum era of Major League Soccer, where they're old enough to vote, they're old enough to travel, and they're even old enough to rent a car. 25 years old, there's a lot of things you can do in this world, and they're finally acting like it.
There was also a couple eras that had a much different shade that we won't go into.
It had to do with, like, yeah, you're right, yeah, wood. Let's call it wood, to be
the
nice.
Wood era, yeah, just like a Five Rings, the wood medals. And look, they came through it, and I don't think we're ever going to go back to a wood medal era again, and the CBA reflects that this is an era. And I like your analogy of moving out of the house at 25, right? It is pretty accurate. And that means that the next contract's going to come when they're 30, which is also often a major change in people's lives. That's when you're getting married. That's when you're maybe thinking about children. That's when you're buying a house for the first time in a lot of cases, unless you've won the lottery. You're not buying a house much earlier than that nowadays.
Well, buying a house, period, in 2020. Where are you living? You're clearly not in the same place I am.
No place that a major league soccer club is. And you're in Montreal, so you can't talk.
Exactly.
I know it's getting worse, but not as bad as here yet.
Exactly. Yeah, it is. It is. All right. And speaking of, we'll be back tomorrow. Actually, no. Tomorrow's Saturday. We'll be back Monday.
Something happens, we won't be back tomorrow.
Exactly. We might. We'll follow, of course, the semifinals of the CONCACAF Women's Olympic Qualifier tonight on OneSoccer. We'll watch that. Canadian Women's National Team. Maybe we'll have a special show on Breaking News Audio later tonight if Canada qualifies for Tokyo. And you can find that show at patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. You can follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Laramie, and this show at Soccer Today SBN. Live Monday to Friday, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific. I just want to say a little thank you to everyone who listened, shared the show this week. This has been the biggest show in the history, actually the biggest week in the history of this show. It got me so excited, I missed my words. So thank you to everyone who helped us become a good show. And until Monday, as always, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.